The Defense Department will propose new rules on Monday that are designed to close up some of the gaps officials see in the financial protections military members are entitled to as of today. DOD concludes that the way it's been implementing a 2006 law had tons of loopholes in it. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about the changes in this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook. And Jared, I know every time I go to a military base, it's just loaded around there with payday lenders, title loan lenders, check cashers, rent-to-own places, and all of that. All of these operations that anybody that is reputable in financial management and planning says operate kind of on the fringes of the financial services market. Is this the kind of thing that the Pentagon wants to get at in a more deliberate and in a more forceful way?
Yeah, it's exactly the kind of thing. And even though that broader payday lending and short-term lending industry is a giant thing, and it's not necessarily on the fringes anymore of the financial industry, I think there's a subset of it that really is different for military members. And this issue around military members and predatory lending is something that I have a very hard time being objective about. So just for the purposes of full disclosure, I'm going to put that out there. The reason is these folks specifically, I think, try to target military members for a couple of reasons. They do it for two reasons. They know that they are a very low credit risk for these short-term loans. They know that they're going to be getting a stable paycheck for probably at least a couple years. And they also know that despite the fact that they're a relatively low risk, they can charge incredibly high interest rates because they're dealing with people who are not that financially sophisticated. And in the same way that you and I were not that financially sophisticated when we were 18 years old.
Yes.
So what's actually happening on Monday is that DOD will propose a set of new rules under a law that Congress passed in 2006, which is called the Military Lending Act. And that law basically capped interest rates for anyone who's serving on active duty at a 36% APR. But the law left it up to DOD to decide what kinds of financial products the law should apply to. DOD thought that they had basically covered their bases with the first round of rules in combination with state laws. But as one military financial advisor said this week, it's basically a game of whack-a-mole. You create one set of rules that you hope won't be too restrictive to industry, and then shadier lenders find a way around it. So DOD went big this time, I think. The rules are not final yet. They're just proposed rules. But they basically would cover all payday lenders, and not just payday lenders, but credit cards, loans against car titles, any loan basically that charges interest rates, and it caps them all at 36%. And the only real benefit they extended to the lending industry was that they said, okay, we'll give you access to a database so that you can tell for yourself whether the lender that's in front of you is a military member or not, or, you know, in other words, someone that should be subject to these rules or not. And as long as you make a good faith effort to make sure that you're not violating the rules for military members by accessing that database, you use it, you follow the other rules, we're not going to go after you and prosecute you.
So here's my fear. I wonder if we know enough about the specifics of this to be able to discern whether this is really going to get at the root of the problem. Because as you said, this is a whack-a-mole game. And what we've seen in other areas of the economy is when somebody charges usury interest rates and gets called on it, it's fine. They just turn them into service fees.
Right.
And you know, change the name. And legally, that's sufficient. And I wonder, when you say that the DOD thinks that they're going big this time, if they've had an opportunity to dig that far into it, or if we even know if that's the case yet.
I mean, the logical conclusion of this is exactly what you just suggested is what happens. I mean, these lenders have been in this business for a long time. They employ a lot of effort to figure out how to get around whatever rules they are. I think what the department would say is they've been studying this for the past year. They put out a big 50-page report back in April that basically concluded that there are a ton of low-cost lending options for members of the military. And there are tons of reputable lenders who would love to give low-interest, short-term loans to the same population because they also know that they're going to be, you know, that they're going to have steady incomes. And there are plenty of firms out there that do that, big banks like USAA and credit unions like Navy Federal and Pentagon Federal and tons of other ones. The challenge for DOD is getting an 18-year-old to understand that those things are out there, because they do not operate in storefronts, as you alluded to back before, right outside a military base. So the challenge that they're going to have now is basically doing some rudimentary financial education. I don't know, maybe that's just going to happen as a rudimentary part of boot camp. I don't see any other way to combat that, because this stuff proliferates everywhere. And it's not just payday lenders. There are kiosks set up in malls outside of military bases where they want to sell you consumer electronics like iPads and laptops. And the only way that you're allowed to pay for them is to take an allotment out of your military paycheck. And the way that they sell them is there's no sticker price. It doesn't say $599 for this laptop.
Mm-hmm.
It says $15 per pay period. Doesn't say how many payments that is.
Right.
You're basically on the hook for the rest of your life. And again, if you're 18, you're not sophisticated
enough
to
difference.
Ask those questions.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. The military has done, I know, for a period of time, some rudimentary financial services education, because as you point out inside the reporter's notebook, this costs the military a lot of money if they have to separate somebody, because they you can lose clearance, you can be ineligible for certain types of service, and it costs the military a lot of money to lose somebody like that.
That's right. The military does not want to have its members in debt. As you allude to, the security clearance is a big issue. You cannot have a security clearance if you have big debt problems. And it just generally impairs your ability to perform on the job. It impacts your readiness and the financial impact to the Pentagon. Once somebody gets in really deep and you have to separate somebody, they estimate that it's about an average of $57,000 to replace, to recruit, to retrain a replacement for that person. And that's a lower level enlisted member. If it's somebody more highly ranking, then the cost is going to be a lot more.
Federal News Radio's DOD reporter Jared Serbu going inside the reporter's notebook. And another item in your notebook this week, Jared, is that the Pentagon has found a new source for saving money, and it involves just a little bit of cutting here and there.
A little bit of cutting here and there. This is around databases, and this is not exactly news. I've been covering Pentagon IT for around 4 years, and I've been hearing people say we've got overlapping and duplicative data. GAO has said this in various databases, in the military services, and at the OSD level. I'm sure you've had more than one person on your show talking about that issue.
Oh, a couple here and there.
A couple here and there. there is now, it looks like, a concerted effort to go and systematically find those things. So this is being led by Terry Halverson, who's the new DOD acting CIO, in partnership with Dave Tillotson, who's the department's acting deputy chief management officer. They're going through this piece by piece in an effort that they call a business and systems process improvement program. They're starting with their own offices. They say that they've already found a lot of those issues within their own offices. So they're basically going to consolidate what they can, get rid of the legacy systems that they can, take the system that have the most authoritative, most accurate, most up-to-date, and most cost-effective operational methods, use those. If none of it makes sense, if everything that they've got, if all of the databases that are existing right now are out of date, if none of them really offers an advantage over the other, then, and only then, they will go out for a new acquisition and try to replace it with something that's truly modern and replace all the legacy stuff. But the bottom line is they say they really are trying to root through all of the old legacy databases that they have, get rid of the ones that are hosting duplicative data. And at the end of the exercise, they think that they're going to save somewhere between 10 and 20 billion, B with a billion, billion with a B, that is, over the next 5 years. Not an insignificant amount of money.
Yeah, that's an awful lot of money. And I appreciate the sentiment in the quote from Terry Halverson that you have in the notebook. On both the process and system side, you really should lead by example. So we started with the DCMO, Deputy Chief Management's office, and the CIO, Chief Information Officer. He started at home.
That's right. And which is a logical place to do it, I think, if you're leading a task force like that. The most logical place to start it is within the organizations that you understand the best. But I think that's going to be kind of their template for how they attack this going forward. They say that they've already found some. And by all rights, those should be the places where there were, you know, the least overlapping data sources and the most rationalized database systems. If they found some even in those offices, then God knows what else is out there.
Jared Serbu's Inside the Reporter's Notebook on In Depth with Francis Rose. And your last item in the notebook is also from Terry Halverson. But there's something that you wrote in here that I don't think you maybe occurred to you that was a big deal, but I think it's a big deal.
I'm interested to hear what it is.
This week's Q&A between reporters and Halverson, the first in what he promised will be quarterly chats with the press, also included, and we'll talk about what it included in a moment. I think that's a big deal that we're going to see that level of transparency from the chief information officer's office at the Pentagon, albeit in an acting role. Mr. Halverson is there, but we didn't see that level of conversation and have that level of vision into what the CIO's office was thinking under Terry Takei, I don't think.
We did not. We saw her maybe once a year at a conference where she held a brief roundtable with press. I hope Mr. Halverson stays true to his word. I have heard many people within the government as they come into office say that I'm going to be very transparent and I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep engaging with the press and the public. And then the first one is the last one. I'm not saying he's going to do that. I hope he stays true to his word. But as you said, he says he's going to do this quarterly. There were several topics that we covered in a full hour that he gave us, to his credit, earlier this week. But the one that we covered in this particular element of the notebook is his view on the joint information environment. And he didn't really criticize the policies that had been put in place by Ms. Takei and the military services while she was in office. He says they really just feels like they need some more consistent deliverables and more milestones that the military services, DISA, everybody else that's in this JIE game can reach toward as they build toward it. Because his main point, I think, is that there's not an end game here. There's not an end state. We're always going to be building more toward joint IT. So he wants to have milestones along the way, like the joint regional security stacks that we've talked about before, like the mobility goals that DoD is working toward right now for smartphones that are accessible for both secret level data and non-secret level data.